Good evening, everyone. Today, September 20, 2023, is the last session of our classes for this year. So today's topic is the Noble Quest. The Noble Quest. Before that, I need to explain few Pali words here. Now, the first word is asana. E in Pali, the vowels A and O are definitely long vowels. They are definite long vowels. However, in order for it easier remember them, so you might have, when you refer to the international Pali alphabet, that is the Romanized Pali alphabet, so you will say, well, for example, when you say A, A, and you put the diacritical mark hyphen on top of A, pronounce A. When you come to U, U, A, A, E, E, U, U, A, 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 E, E, U, U, then A, O. A and O are definite, they are long vowels. However, here I have put the diacritic mark for easier pronunciation. The first word is asana, A with the diacritic mark hyphen on top, so that's asana, pronounced longer, asana, E-S-A-N-A, long A, asana. Second word is gavesana. That is G-A-V-E, long E, S-A-N-A, Gavesana. And Gavesana, given the etymology, it is two words, Gava, G-A-V-A, plus E-S-A-N-A, Asana, Gavesana. And third word, Pariyesana. P-A-R-I-Y-E-S-A-N-A, Pariyesana, etymologically is two words, and it is the same word asana, but you use the prefix pari with asana, so it becomes Pariyesana. And the last word is gochara, that is G-O, long O, C-A-R-A, gochara. Again, etymologically is two words. Combined, it becomes gochara. That's G-O plus C-A-R-A, gochara. Now these are the key words today. So now, today's topic is the Noble Quest. I've been talking about the deceptive nature of the mind. If I take you back to the Buddha's time, where when Siddhartha called himself, in the 6th century BCE, those who embarked upon a lifelong journey in quest of the truth was known as Satchagavesi. This term you studied before, Satchagavesi, S-A-C-C-A, Satcha, truth. Gavesi is one who seeks. Satchagavesi is the seeker after truth. Now, back in the Buddha's time, so if you ask, let's say, you are traveling somewhere and you encounter someone who seems to be a religious or a spiritual person, and you haven't met someone like before, given his attire, his appearance. And if you ask him, who are you? And he would say, I am a Satchagavesi. It was a trend. Nowadays, we in this social media age, we talk about trends. One key trending word during the Buddha's time was Satchagavesi. Anyone would call themselves a Satchagavesi, truth seeker or seeker after truth. Now, and everyone would embark upon, people were fed up with some religious, those who were fed up with their empirical existence, those who had already been to different teachers, having studied a lot of philosophies and ideas, religious ideas, all that, but some were still frustrated as to what truth is. Now, so they would travel as a Satyagavesi, seeker after truth. And Siddhartha himself became a Satyagavesi. And there's a whole Pali phrase, king, K-I-M with the diacritical mark dot underneath M, so pronounced ng, like in singing, ng, ng, dying, going, so king. King Satyagavesi. What is the truth? I don't know what it is, so I'm seeking after truth. King Satyagavesi was a very popular phrase. Now, everyone is a Satyagavesi. Now, Siddhartha himself became a Satyagavesi. Once, as you know, you have read the Buddha's biography, Siddhartha's biography, and you come to know that Siddhartha remained affiliated with different teachers for some time. Once he encountered one teacher, Sanjay by name. Sanjay had a big following. Now, when Siddhartha, as an ascetic, as a Satyagavesi, joined Sanjay's group, over time, so Siddhartha won Sanjay's heart, but Siddhartha himself didn't have an agenda for that. He was one of his enthusiastic students. In the eyes of Sanjaya, Siddhartha was the most enthusiastic, most capable, and the smartest student. Siddhartha spent several months with Sanjaya. However, his mission was different. One morning he paid a visit to his guru Sanjaya, and asked him for his permission to leave the group. He said that, "Sir, I have to leave the group." And Sanjaya became frustrated. He became sad, actually. He said that, "Please don't go. You are my most favorite students. What I can do is I will split the group, and you lead one group, and you will be the guru for that group. So I will lead another group because I never want you to go. So that is real in day-to-day lives also. People would love to become gurus. They would love to lead the group. Now, and Siddhartha wasn't interested at that all. If he wanted, he would have remained the king, because his coronation was months away when he left his lay life. He was not interested at all. And she said, "Sir, no, I never want to lead the group. My idea, so why I became a wandering ascetic is to become a Satyagavesi. So I am a seeker after truth." And Sanjay would say to him, "Well, this is the truth, you have learned it. You have learned it because I teach the truth, that's why I have a big following." Now remember, after his enlightenment, when somebody asked who Buddha's guru was, Buddha said, "I don't have a guru." I'm using the word guru because now guru is an English word. "I don't have a guru." So then how did you learn? "Well, I realized it myself." Now, if there's a guru, that is the Dhamma. That is what I have realized myself. That is guru. Because when Devadatta wanted to split the Sangha, of course he did, So Devadatta's ambition was to become another Buddha. That's why he killed, right? He killed the Buddha. He tried to kill the Buddha, so that he would even become the Buddha. He thought that Devadatta always, he would always think about in terms of politics and institutional settings. He wanted to be the Buddha. Now, at that, going back to Sanjaya, so Siddhartha left. He never wanted to be a guru, to lead another group. So why his idea? Because otherwise he would... now, here's another word. Buddha rejected the idea of the guru. Why? It can only massage your ego, your atta, A-T-T-A, atta, O, that's Pali, and O, A, long A, T-M-A, ma, atma, atman. Usually we atta or atma, Pali word atta or Sanskrit atma usually translates as soul, but actually it is ego. According to a lot of scholars, atta means ego. When I talk about myself, I'm not talking about anything else. I'm pointing to my ego. So it's not that philosophically, I have ego, but that I myself am ego. So I point to anything, it's my ego. If I turn to my eyes, subconsciously, it is my eyes. So if someone says, okay, your eyes look worse than my eyes, someone else says, then I might get angry. Why? No, it's my eyes. Because we are subjective. Because there's a subjective orientation that is innate. Our entire existence, my nature, my being, is all about ego. Now, Siddhartha never wanted to get his ego massage. So that's why he rejected the idea. Upon his enlightenment, as I said, he rejected to accept himself as a guru. It was the people who called him a guru, not himself. Right? Not himself. Now, that's because Satcha. Now, so the noble quest, what is the quest, as you know, it's the search. And in the Arya Pariyesana Sutta, is one of the greatest teachings of the Buddha. All his teachings are great, but that is one of the profound sutras is Arya Pariyesana. Remember the word Arya Pariyesana, that's the word Esana, Gavesana, Pariyesana. And that's the Pariyesana. That's called the Arya, as you know, is Arya. Arya means noble. You are very familiar with the word Arya. The sutra on the noble quest. Please read it. It's available on Google. It's a long sutra, actually. It's worth reading, Arya Pariyesana. I have read it like 30 over times. I feel like reading it again. Since my Samaneda training days, I started reading. I still need to. Every time I read it, I get new ideas. Sometimes when I'm stressed out, I read Arya Pariyesana Sutra. And I ask myself, why did you become a monk? What are you doing right now? Where are you going? What is your quest? What are you searching for? Then I would say, oh, okay, it's not about people, it's not about the company, it's not about the books, it's not about my certificates, it's not about my citizenship, it's not about my even my robe, it's not about my appearance. There is something else underneath. That is why I'm looking for Arya Pariyesana. So, because I need to capture myself, that is, capture my ego. So that is the best quest. And we'll come to that point later. Now let's see these words. Esana, it comes in the root, the verbal root, ish, to seek, ish, to seek, esana, this word. Root-ish. So far you have come up with this root many times, I guess, because it is, this verbal root produces a lot of verbs. lot of fresher verbs too. So esana again is quest, to seek, and gavesana. I love the word gavesana. Now gava plus esana. You know the meaning of esana now. Esana is a noun. Esati is to seek, to now esati gavesana. Now gava. Those who are from the South Indian background know the word gava. Gava means cattle or cow. Gava. So gava esana. Now in Sanskrit and in Sinhalese and in South Asian language, and so when you inquire something, when you carry out investigation, when you carry out some investigation in Sanskrit, in Pali, it's called gavesana. Gavesana Pali, gaveshana, shana, or Sanskrit and Sinhalese. Now, but the literal meaning of gaveshana is gava is cattle. Now, esana is to seek, to search. Searching for cattle. When someone, because when in an agricultural community, the best people make, they don't have any other way of making a living. They do, they become shepherds and they keep cattle. Like when you might have to, when I see documentaries on Central Asia, Mongolia, so cattle is also considered.
Sorry.
It's okay. That's good. That's good for the moment. I have positive thinking. I got like started getting carried away by the music. I like it. So gavesana. Gava is considered one of the treasures that someone might have. Even to these days in Afghanistan, in Central Asia, in Mongolia. Now, so let's say. A parents have one daughter. Now, as they are looking for a groom, a good son-in-law, and they would always see whether how many cattle the son-in-law might have. Or when the groom gets a dowry, there can be a better deal or quicker deal given the number of cattle that the would-be groom owns. So cattle. So the higher the number of cattle you have, you are richer based on cattle. So that's, so the cattle is cattle is considered one of the most valuable jangama nidhana, jangama, mobile treasures. That's word is there. Mobile treasures. One of the highest, one of the most valuable. And then, so the number, the size of your herd of cattle can determine your position. Your position, your social esteem. Let's say you have 200 cattle, and I got 250. So my position would be much higher than yours in an agricultural community, because then your income is stable and more. So that's for the gava. So that's how, given the role the word gava, or the treasure of cattle, place in our lives, especially in agricultural India back in the days, even to these days. So it becomes like, because gava being the most important treasure, probably the only thing you have, in case you lose it, and you are ready to make any sacrifice to find your lost cattle. So that is when we have enlightenment, we are able to enlighten, get ourselves enlightenment. However, we need to get into a lifelong journey or probably beyond, to search and this rediscover our discover our lost not lost rediscover our the innate potential of enlightenment. Yes, Laksia.
Sorry, it's a bit of a tangent, but
mm-hmm.
in those days,
mm-hmm.
were cattle sacred that they didn't kill them?
Yeah, the sacred.
Even then,
to this date in India, it's sacred.
Even at the Buddhist time?
In the Buddhist time, yeah.
So they only use the cattle for milk and that's it?
Milk, yeah. Mm-hmm, milk.
Okay.
Not for meat. But there were some people, not all were Hindus. Not everyone worshipped cattle. There are some others who didn't. Even to this day, there are certain Hindu sects in India. They are not vegetarian, like Kali worshippers.
Mm-hmm.
Kali worshippers. They are meat eaters. They consume an abundance of meat on daily basis and daily life. And for example, in years ago, there was this sacrifice or yaga, Y-A-G-A, yaga is a sacrifice. Now, there was a sacrifice was actually the sacrifice of cattle existed before the modern Hinduism. Because there was a different kind of sacrifice. Sacrifice of cattle, sacrifice of horses, sacrifice of different kind of animals. And it comes a Purushamed, sacrifice of human beings too. There were sacrificial offerings. So the cattle were used for sacrificial offerings to God. However, in the Vedic period, the term Hinduism is a pretty new term. Because it has went through the Vedic religions, gone through a lot of transformations. Now, first called the Veda, and then during the Veda period, what is that? There are four eras: Veda, Vedic, Yajur. Those are the Vedic, Yajur, Samana, and Atharvan. Within the Veda itself, there were four Vedas. And there are a lot of differences of opinion. There were sharp differences of opinion when it comes to who God was. Now, in early days, there was Indra, and we talked about Indra. So even though Hindus don't necessarily agree to, and then the idea came from Persia. Persia. So a lot of Hindu ideas are derived from Persian beliefs. Yes,
sir, you answered my question.
Okay, yeah, Persian beliefs, yeah. Nationalist, those who have a nationalistic approach to Hinduism wouldn't believe that. They would say no. Then anyone would say, okay, Hinduism is the oldest religion. My Jewish friends always, Judaism is the oldest. Mm-hmm. However, they easily connect with Zoroastrianism. Judaism carries a lot of Zoroastrian characteristics. And then we, the Hindus, worship the fire god. Actually, it is not pre-Hindu. It came from Persia. So, for example, the gatha, that word, the word we, that U-G-A-T-H-A, gatha. Gatha is verse. It's a poem or verse. It's a Persian word. In the ancient Persian language, gatha means poem. We have a lot of Sanskrit to it. And Sanskrit borrow a lot of terms from all Persian language. So that's why I was during the first year, as a first year university undergrad, I got interested in historical linguistics. Sometimes I would study one word for like a few months. I would say, okay, it's a Sinhalese word, no, it's Hindu too, no, it's Sanskrit, oh no, it's Persian too. When you travel back to the history along the linguistics line, you can find a lot of lost connections. That's why I got into these words. You see these words also. Probably one day we have an etymology of Pali class next year if I come back. When I come back, probably it's always good to have a Pali philosophical class. Then you can come up with a lot of ideas. Now. So the gava esana, meaning to investigate. However, literal meaning of gava esana is to search for the cattle, probably the lost cattle. Remember one man one day came to Buddha very hungry And when he never thought that he would see the Buddha somehow. The previous night he lost his cattle. What happens was, so that he couldn't come back to the city before the city gates were closed. So he spent out. He spent the night outside the city gates. The following morning, when the gates were open, and that he was extremely hungry. That's nothing. He was yet to find the lost cattle. However, he encountered the Buddha, and he was instantaneously his tiredness, his frustration was gone. Oh, please teach me something. And that's when he called Venerable Anand and said, this man seems to be very hungry. First, feed him first. Give him some food. That's why even to this day, we stick to that thing. If someone comes to whosoever it is, come drop by the temple, first thing is, okay, we would like to ask, when we would offer him something to eat. Because that's the humanity, actually. That's more human than sharing your knowledge. Right? So then Gavesana. And the next word is Pariyesana. Esana. Now, see, the word is Esana is to look. So, but however, the best word is the Gavesana here. Now, searching for the cattle. Definitely, you must own the cattle to search for. Definitely, what implies the searching for cattle means searching for the lost cattle. You lost the most important thing in your life. Probably your cattle is more important than your own life, because otherwise you cannot survive. Now what that implies is, and it can easily relate to the duty of a Sammāsambuddha. A Sammāsambuddha doesn't theorize any teachings. He doesn't formulate. He doesn't found anything. So sometimes in academic books you come across this definition of Buddha. Buddha is the founder of Buddhism. He never founded anything. He rediscovered what had been lost. What had been lost is, who has lost? Conventionally, okay, the society has lost it. The world has lost it. But actually, everyone has lost the potential to get enlightened. So that is why when we say the Buddha comes to the world to rediscover the truth. The truth is not about the natural world, not about the physical world. It's all about oneself. Now, see, I have been a monk for many years now. I'm not enlightened yet. Where is my enlightenment? I know that I have the potential. I use my potential just like a poor man is looking for his cattle, and he is searching through the... He would even put his life at risk. He might get eaten by wildlife, but he will continue day and night. So he would travel cutting through the jungles. He would travel any long distance in search of his lost cattle. Just like that man is traveling, doing everything possible in search of, to find his lost cattle. Now, and Buddha says that, be that enthusiastic. Be as enthusiastic and vigorous as someone searching for their lost cattle. That is the sense that the word Gavesana is used. See how... unless you know the literal meaning, words don't make any sense in many cases. It's always because one term is surrounded by a lot of ideas, a lot of story, a lot of history, a lot of psychology. Any question about the Gavesana?
It must make it so difficult to make translations because somebody from the Western world who's come across this
that's
world,
right, yeah.
Looking
mm-hmm.
for cattle.
Cattle, yeah.
What does
that's
that
right.
Mean?
Uh-huh.
If you're a farmer, you'd understand.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One day I had to give a talk I taught mindfulness for like 7-8 months in a Catholic church in Toronto. Scarborough, Toronto. There was only one priest. He was in late 80s. There were only 5-6 congregants only. No one was there. Three old ladies and two gentlemen coming. 5 people only. So I went there and then I did counseling and taught. Later, there were so many. I invited younger people around. I asked them to come and and later I started a mindfulness group for that church, because the temple was, the temple that I was staying in was 10 minutes away. So the church was in the vicinity. So every time I would drop by the church and we became friends, and he would offer me a cup of coffee. He knows how to brew a good coffee. Mm-hmm. He had a coffee machine. So then he would offer me dates and coffee. Because his father was this Canadian, his father was a Turkish Christian. So they escaped in fear of persecution in Iran. Iranian. So that's when he would make me coffee, and then I was going to say the long story short. When the congregation started growing, especially with young people, I said that I had to go to Sri Lanka for spend some time. Then he said that, and he told me, he patted on my shoulder and gave me a hug and said, "Our shepherd is leaving." Our shepherd is leaving. You know, that's one of the good words that the Christians or Catholics use to recognize someone. Our shepherd was leaving, and he said a lot. He told me, then later I said, "Why did you call me a shepherd?" You know what? So he said that we have the Good Shepherd's Convent, Good Shepherd Church and all this. Even in Sri Lanka also, right? Mm-hmm. Shepherds. Mm-hmm. So, and then he told me that, why did he said that, well, I think that in this old age, I have lost a lot of things also. I was wondering why I am running this church. What is the meaning of this life? I know that I believe in God somehow. Given what I have been doing the whole, my entire life to this moment, I wonder what I have done. Because later we became very good. And when I came back from Sri Lanka, and then until his death, so I was associated with this church. And then we had a lot of, we talked about Gavesana a lot. Actually, he learned some Pali words too. That's in response to your question. Then he told me, "Well, in that case, probably you are not a shepherd. You are more than that." Then I said, "No, sir, we are all shepherds." Because I had to, so that's why the Buddha comes to the world, and so we need to, it is an inner quest. We need to search for the ability. Now, search for what I have lost. Actually, what has been lost, meaning. So enlightenment is not something that is planted in your head anew. You have it. You have it. So, now, how do you say you have it? If you do, now, when you eradicate your defilements or killers slowly, it's a difference that it might take many lifetimes. Now, finally, when you claim, when you say that you have gotten enlightened, and you have become the Buddha or the Arahat or the Paccheka Buddha, now, so, have you, eventually, could you declare that you have found anything? In the name of enlightenment, you wouldn't find anything. We only discover one thing. What is that? It's like a golden vessel that had been underground, and you unearth it, and you clean it, and you polish it, so that you can see it's gold. Now, in the name of what we do, what we rediscover is, now, we remove multiple layers of kilesas. Finally, our mind come, we come to a point that we don't actually have anything. I don't actually have anything. I do conventionally, but all those things are temporary. Then you find nothingness. You don't find anything. When you come to the point, there's nothing to be, there's nothing further. Actually, you can use one whole phrase to describe enlightenment, because individual terms further confuse us. So that's why nowadays people don't like the word emptiness. When you add the suffix -ness, again you conceptualize something. You reform -ness, suffix -ness, take you back to square one again. So when you read the Theragathas and Therigathas, the joyful utterances of enlightened monks and nuns. Now, what they do is they give a whole description. They narrate their life story. Some even describe their past samsara. And finally, they come to a point where they would say, I have been through all these, so what? There's nothing. And that is enlightenment. And so that you are not worried that you have lost anything. Always we find, we run after something when we have lost it, or when we have lost here means we already have that in our mind. What is that? I say, like the ice cream that day you offered me more ice cream, Haagen-Dazs. I ate 2 cups. Then I even told her, because I want to make sure that. That okay, thank you for the ice cream, okay, give me some more. Now, after that also somebody brought him up ice cream. You know what? Due to despite my being a monk so long, I showed my typical mindset. I said, oh, that's good ice cream, but that's not Haagen-Dazs. See, the relative thinking, we always compare relativity. Now, without referring to relativity, we can define our existence. So that is why Albert Einstein got interested in Buddhism. Then that's why he created the theory of relativity, based on the Buddha's idea of causality. Causality and relativity mean the same thing. However, in science, he coined the word relativity. So we are always in search for something. What happened to us when we have found what we had been running after or searching for? Over time, are we going to be the same happy person, people? No. Over time, it's going to, is that all? So if you eat the same ice cream, same recipe, over time you get, you lose interest. That is when you need to, then again you become gavesana. Gavesa. So where the pariyesana, Buddha doesn't use the word gavesana, he uses the word pariyesana. Gavesana is to simply investigate. Pariyesana means like a 360 complete circle. In pariyesana, you continually reduce your subjectivity. That's what called pariyesana. And you are part of your investigation. You are not looking for something for yourself. Whereas in gavesana, it's my cattle. Whereas in pariyesana, you become less and less subjective. Pariyesana. That's why he doesn't use the word gaves, and he uses the word pariyesana. Pari means complete.
This is same as the 4 stages of enlightenment?
Great, yes. Mm-hmm. 4 stage of enlightenment.
Another question. Mm-hmm. Somebody asked me this the other day.
Uh-huh.
When you progress,
yeah.
Say, you reach Sotapanna first,
uh-huh.
And then so on,
uh-huh.
Does the change happen suddenly, or is it a gradual process?
It's now there has been actually this has been the subject of debates over the Buddhist history, because there was one school called Sudden Enlightenment School, they have the other one, the Gradual Practice School in China. Now, so that is where the Buddha says now, it can be both, it can be either. In certain cases, sudden enlightenment. In certain cases, you have to strive harder. Now, however, ethically, it's always we are reminded to encourage people for their enlightenment as soon as possible, given the dreadful nature of samsara. However, there can be karma involved, there can be another bhumi involved, like you want to be a Paccheka Buddha or a Samma Sambuddha, or probably even though you have the ability, because you have some problems with your cognition, there are different reasons involved. However, ethically, we need to encourage ourselves for enlightenment. Whereas some people get enlightened right away, suddenly, given their understanding. That's called Khana Sampatti, K-H-A-N-A, Khana. So, ability for enlightenment. Sometimes some people don't have to listen much.
Presumably, they have had some training in their previous
life. Previous training. Yeah, that's the actually key thing. Because some people say that I got enlightened all of a sudden, and somebody could counter, well, you have training in your past lives in samsara. So, in the case of Venerable Chakkupala, as I said, Adivedi discovered Chakkupala's. Chakku means eyes. Pala means controller. South Asia is very famous in the world for nicknaming people. And I said, there's a whole nickname culture, even in here too. See, Sari, Putta, Moggallana, they are nicknames, not the actual names. Sari is son, Sari Putta. Moggali is son, Moggallana, so that's how the Moggali Putta. So, like the famous Arahat during the Ashokan period. Now, so when it comes to Chakkupala, His actual name was Chakkupala. He didn't sleep 16 years. So he has perfect control over his ears, his eyes, meaning he didn't sleep. Control of eyes, meaning he wouldn't sleep. That's Chakkupala. He strived for enlightenment like 16 years. 16 years later, one day he became an arahat. All the way, the fourth level of enlightenment. The moment he did, what happened? He became totally blind. It happened at the same moment. The moment he became fully enlightened, he became totally blind. He lost his eyesight. One thing is why, and it has a, once I discussed this story with some neuroscientists in the US. Now, when you keep yourself motivated, you can hold on to your certain biological and emotional conditions. And so that now he thought to himself, I don't have to, probably he thought, I don't, probably he didn't think, but he gave up on his, he stopped his vigorous practice of sleeplessness. So that's where the moment probably when an old machine keeps, as long as an old machine keeps running, it doesn't collapse. Right? When you stop it, actually the start of the, we had the Buddhist discussion with some neuroscientists in Florida. So the idea of retirement, as we came to, never to retire. When you retire, you got sick. You get sick because you, at least subconsciously, you consider yourself invalid now. So Chakkupala, upon becoming enlightened, and so he became, at the same moment, he became totally blinded. So that's a one fine example of strenuous practice. However, given the long period of 16 years, it could be enough for him to live, how to relive, like many other lifetimes that he, during which he was unable to practice paramitas properly. It was like a fast track thing. Fast track. So later Buddha said that because of his strenuous practice, he became enlightened. What actually he did was, it wasn't a sudden enlightenment. But again, it involved rigorous practice. Yeah.
Can I ask
something?
Mm-hmm. So this enlightenment is the stages, isn't it?
Yeah, four stages.
Oh,
so four stages, yeah. Sotapanna, yeah. Sakadagami, Anagami, Arahat.
So we call enlightenment any
yeah, that's called the different levels of enlightenment. But when you use the term enlightenment proper, that, quote-unquote, that means full enlightenment.
Yeah,
that's why when as a terminology in as terms we call the four stages of enlightenment.
Yeah.
Then you further you could say which stage it is. The next thing is gochara. G-O long O, C-A-R-H, gochara. C is pronounced according to the international Pali alphabet. C is pronounced ch, not as k, ch. Actually, that's called C-A-R-I-Y-A, charya, charya. And it has a connection with the English word character. Character. It has an Indo-Indian connection, character. So English being an Indo-European language, when so we use C-H-A, ch. But C-H-A, k. Character. Charya is the same root, character, our behavior. Charya is character. When you ask the temple write a character certificate for you, it's all about your charya, your behavior, what you have done. So the gochara. Gochara, it means pasture. However, the literal meaning is very interesting. Gochara. Go is cattle again. Chara is moving, traveling, wandering around, or grazing. Cows grazing, cows wandering around. Cows wandering around. Meaning, why do cattle wander around? Why do cattle travel long distances in search of greens? So that is what gochara in Pali, the formal meaning is pasture. But the literal meaning is cows grazing. Cows grazing. See, and then Buddha calls us, we are like cows, we are like cow cattle. Why? Buddha uses the word gochara to describe how we get, step into traps. How we get trapped, or how we disregard possible risks in our life. So with the word gochara is used nowadays in business studies, in engineering they use as risk management. In risk management, the word gochara is highly used. I'm helping someone for his master's thesis. He want to write about his master's, he's for MBA, so the master's degree in business studies about gochara, risk management. Now, if your only target is the profit, so you may ignore the risks involved. Now, profit in profit making. Now, just like gochara. So, Buddha uses the word gochara. So now the ethical or the Buddhist meaning of gochara is perception. Perception. So perception, so we perceive. That we perceive means we are always in search of something that would bring us happiness. So the gochara, the Buddhist spiritual meaning of gochara is perception. So the literal meaning is cows grazing, cows wandering around pasture. Now this is how it is explained in the Buddhist scripture. Now there's a herd of cattle, and the owner would just set them free because it's a big land. So that the pasture is surrounded by forests. So what if the cattle and the forest is famous for big cats, like predator animals? Now, when the cattle are so much into feeding themselves on the grass, they might get their natural survival instincts overridden by their attention, by their craving for the grass. As a result, a big cat can they would have to sacrifice their life for a predator animal's meal. So that is why Buddha uses this pascha gochara as a perception. How we continue to get deluded by the deceptive nature of our mind. So the mind deceives us. We get deluded, deceived by our own mind when we deal in our perceptions. How to minimize that is to see through the limits of our, that's called desire management, to manage our desires. That's the only way. We have to manage our desire, what we want, what we don't want, what we want, what we need, urges. That's the only way, because what we do in the name of spiritual practice in the Buddha's teaching is reduction of something all the time. We are reducing something, trying to reduce something. So that's all. So it's not good to use that philosophical term reductionist, right? There's a whole idea of reductionism and reductionist, but we can still use the word. So it's always we need to have a reductionist approach. I noticed that there were so many people all over the world lining up to buy the new iPhone 15. Some people purposely called me and said, "Bhante, are you going to buy one?" No, I the old phone, that's enough. No, usually you must have, right? Because you are a monk, travel a lot. Why show off? I said, I have never taken a picture in the bathroom, picture holding my iPhone against the mirror. Oh, I see. Actually, I forgot to ask. Why don't you take such pictures? I love those bathroom pictures. I said, no, it's all about, not about yourself, it's about your iPhone. However, you redefine yourself through your new, what you have, your belong right, what you own right now. So there were so many people, there was almost a stampede in Saudi Arabia, in Middle Eastern country. And now, over time, yesterday I read Apple News, said that a lot of people, the new version gets overheated, because it's all, I think, it's titanium. Something there, so he said the heat hole there too. However, so now the same person called me and say, "Bhante, you know what? I flew to Singapore from Sri Lanka and then bought the new one. I never want to tell you because you show no interest in this thing. You know what? Today, I feel like I shouldn't have bought it because now what the thing is, people say that iPhone 15 is not good." Okay, but my friend, it's not about your iPhone 15. It's about yourself, right? It's about yourself. No, it's not about myself. No, it's about yourself. Has anyone of your friend told right to your face that, you know what, why did you by that junk because it gets overheated very easily. Yeah, of course, a bunch of people told me, what did you feel? I felt ashamed, I felt angry. So this is about yourself. Not about the phone, it's about yourselves. Okay. So that's the perception. It's all about Pasha. So he all the way, the flight tickets are very expensive. He flew, he borrowed some money, one of his friends, and he flew to Singapore to buy it. And he had to check into a hotel for 3 nights. He found one Chinese man. He came to know one Chinese man, one through one of his friends in Singapore. And he had lost connection with that friend like 12 years ago. He called him in Saudi Arabia and he arranged him. He got him to call that friend and he came over, did the hotel booking and all this. There's so many things involved. So that is why I like this word, gochara. See how far we go. Sometimes for a petty thing, something not so important, we travel miles.
It's an obsession.
It's obsession, yeah. It's obsession, yeah. That's why I also wanted to discuss the seven obsessions based on Anusaya Sutta. Probably we will discuss the next year. Because as part of some other topics, we did discuss the Anusaya Sutta. However, it fits better within this theme. So then gochara, pashakrishna. Any questions? We have 15 minutes. You can ask me any questions. Probably you were able to, you had so many questions, but you had to swallow them back.
You were talking about, I think Christ was considered to be the Good Shepherd, wasn't he?
Hmm.
I think he was often referred to as a Good Shepherd.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody can tell me that that's what
he was. That's right,
so
yeah.
So I wonder whether there is a parallel.
Yeah. There could be a parallel, because if someone from India were here, they will be very happy for me. I'm going to say this, because India is not simply a country, it was a whole civilization. Now, according to even the word Hindu, if the word India is not an Indian word, it's a Persian word. India, Hindu, these are Persian words. So when you say Indian means not a country, but it was the culture was such that it has all spread on Central Asia, Israel, Persia, everywhere. Now, in ancient times, our society was transformed into agriculture from hunter gathering, right? The analogy of shepherd is being used in different cultures and different religions. It's always a metaphor, all the metaphorical explanations, metaphorical explanations of realities, they're all cultural, culture-oriented. There could be a connection between Christianity and Hinduism, especially in Judaism, Zoroastrianism. So, shepherd. And Buddha has, there's another reference to a shepherd. Later you can Google, because I put my phone on airplane mode. I don't know which verse, Dhammapada verse it is. So later I will get the exact reference. If you don't work on your progress, what you do is to dedicate your time and for others. It's like you are a shepherd looking after someone else's cattle. Someone else's cattle is not yours. So that's what Buddha says somewhere in the Dhammapada. Meaning, the emphasis therein is that we need to, let's forget about enlightenment. When you disregard your own progress, conventional worldly progress, how could you survive? So, because samsara, you need to take care of the samsara first. When you have to take care of the samsara first, because nirvana is not outside of samsara. the very comprehension, very understanding the true nature of your existence or samsara is what is called nirvana. The very understanding of it. However, in our conventional imagery of nirvana, we would easily consider samsara is one landscape. We escape this landscape to the other one. That is the nirvanic landscape. That's how we imagine. Even in language, in literature, that's how people are made to think. Could be the kingdom, is another place. So that's why some people hate to think that nirvana. So you have to search samsara, so that you have to clear a forest thicket to find a very valuable item or a gem that you lost. So that sometimes you have to cut down a whole forest to find something tiny but invaluable. So that's when, as we always mention in our classes, Buddha has only used maybe one, probably just a little percentage of his teachings to explain nirvana. Everything else to describe samsara.
So nirvana is, as you said before, is empty place, or you feel it's empty.
So the problem is the word is emptiness again, right?
Yeah,
so if you further describe the word empty, empty of burdens. Empty of burdens. That includes both so-called happiness and sadness is so-called anyway. Both joy and happiness, empty. Finally, even joy over time would bring us sadness again. So that's the reason. Right? So again, back to Hagandas. See, if I keep, let's say from tomorrow onward, you bring me ice cream every day, please don't. When I mean please don't, not a reminder. Okay? Some people say don't, meaning do, right? I need to clarify that right away. So, let's say, for tomorrow onwards, as long as I stay here at London Buddhist Vihara, I'll be eating nothing but ice cream, but that particular brand. What will happen to me? Definitely I will lose interest. It won't take years. After a few meals, I will say, no, I don't like it. And all of a sudden I get the smell of lemon ice cream permeating around. Who is that? Okay, someone is eating. Oh, I think I would like to taste it. Okay. Oh, this is better. I love lemon. Forget about the other brand. So that is how, that's how samsaric behavior. That's samsara. And then I get, why did I decide to give up on Hagandas? It used to be my favorite. And you remember that I told that is the ice cream, nothing else is ice cream. That's the ice cream. Now I am saying that I don't like it anymore. What happened to the joy that I created out of that brand? Where is it now? It is not there, but somehow I continue to maintain a sense of the same ice cream brand, Hagandas. But now I have transformed that sense into a negative one. Now, right now, whenever I think about that ice cream, it's not sukha that I have, joy. I get some dukkha. So that is when both becomes burdens. Both sadness is a burden anyway. You don't have to say that. But joy also becomes a burden. When the mind is completely free, empty of those burdens, both good and bad ones. And then so you come to a point, is it what I had been struggling? Now I know that. That's one story of Kujutara, I guess. Kujutara wants... what's the English say that she had the problem with her spine? Like, forgot the English word, like crooked.
Hunchback?
Yeah, hunchback, yeah. Mm-hmm. Hunchback. So, and then her name is Kujutra, her name is Uttara. Because of physical, mental condition, he came to be Uttara, So that's why he came to be identified. Now, when she became enlightened, she said that I had a problem with my back, that was hunchback. But there were two more things also. My husband, my family life, and my overall samsaric existence. So that now I can stand straight. Now I can stand upright. But he would be the same, he would still have maintained the same medical, the physical condition. Said, but I am now upright, meaning her emotions associated with her physical conditions were permanently gone. And okay, I am upright. And when I consider my family life, I'm upright. When I consider my samsaric overall existence running through, I'm upright. She said, statement of enlightenment, she said that I have become upright not regarding my medical condition. There are two other things too. I had surrendered to my family and my husband. I think her husband was not a good person. And also my overall samsaric existence. I had submitted myself to samsara. What is the point of becoming a slave to my own existence? That's what she said. I am a slave to my own living. Slave to my own existence. Meaning slave to my own samsara. Kujutra stories. So they are available online actually. Choose one of Tera Gatha and Teri Gatha. When they explain Nirvana, they wouldn't talk about Nirvana. They simply explain their narratives are about samsara. Like you don't, when you train, if you are my coach, right? You don't need to take me to the finish line and say, Bhante, you are going to cross this finish line one day. Instead, you teach me how to run. Run the marathon. Right? Run the marathon. You don't have to teach me what the finish line is. But you teach me how to run the marathon, how to take a break, how to slow down, how to pick up speed. Yes?
Yeah, it seems that the society we're living in
mm-hmm.
encourages us to be always doing something and wanting something, having
mm-hmm.
something.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if we follow the Buddha's path, it looks like
mm-hmm.
We shouldn't be doing anything, but internally
mm-hmm.
it's all doing something.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
we're collecting money to give to our kids, or we're looking after our kids, or going after a car or an iPhone, or saving for retirement, the
mm.
next cruise. We just
mm-hmm.
can't sit there doing nothing. So that's, so the, train of thought now, it's kind of.
In order to avoid an ethical problem, Buddha always, it's your choice to go walk away.
Yeah.
Because he cannot generalize it.
The point I was trying to make also was that sometimes
mm-hmm.
we do a lot of charity work
and mm-hmm.
things for other people.
Mm.
That's also just filling time with stuff,
I know, that's true.
Which is like not the path that
that's
not
right.
really concentrating mm-hmm. on.
See,
path.
I get this tired all. Thank you for bringing that up. We have a few more minutes bringing that up. Now, when I was like a 19-year-old monk, I was so much into, I'm not saying anything about the charity work, against the charity. I was so much involved in charity work. As a nine, I would teach English and Japanese, so the students, and Sinhalese grammar and all these things. So, and then my teacher approached me and told me, don't be like in Sinhalese, Sekwe Bendapu Gona. You might know the English word for sekua. I forgot. I learned English word somewhere.
It's round and round.
Yeah, round ends. You know that it's a wooden machine that used to press coconut oil.
Yeah.
There was no mortar. And you always tie...
Press.
Yeah, press. No, you tie a cow.
Oh.
So that's this extending yoke. Yeah. And then so that the cow would travel like millions of rounds until the oil presses is done. But the monks will see that. Okay, there were so many customers lining up. So even if that bull or cow, the poor animal, he doesn't get paid. Once in a while, he will get some grass. But he is not supposed to stop its work. Why? Because there are so many people coming to get their coconut oil pressed. So that, my guru said, okay, if you only do that thing, it's never going to end. So the whole world will be lining up to benefit from your charity. And work on your enlightenment. Do your think about your personal life, your health as well. It's not being opportunistic. He told me then I said, but sir, this is my mission. Yeah, that's your mission. But however, so do metta to yourself first. I don't have to tell you that, he told me. Do metta to yourself first. Okay, Savan. Okay, now go take a break. Otherwise, you'll be like that cow, that poor animal. Always he had to run millions of rounds. People come and they would empty the sack full of dry coconut pieces into that. Copra. Yeah, the copra into that container. And so that the people would come and... And he even told me jokingly, people wouldn't even pat the cow. They wouldn't even look at. Then he would. So the owner would make money. So that he asked me to. You need to take a break from your charity work as well for your own enlightenment. Yes.
Sekku.
Sekku. Yes.
Yeah. Just found it on Google.
Yeah. Right? The sekku. I mean, I don't know the English word. Yeah. English word I need to know, sekwe.
Yeah,
he said sekwe bandapu gona wage, just like gona means the bull, pulling, continually pulling sekwe thing, going millions of, he is in perpetual, what's called that, he has to go around and around the sekwe, but there must be a word, that's the traditional oil pressure, coconut oil pressure. So our time save up. We'll see you next year. Thank you very much for attending and listening to these classes.